City and County of Denver versus the Denver Firefighters, local number 858. Both parties ready?
Yes, Your Honor.
Just a couple housekeeping matters. Justice Marcos will not participate in this case. Argument is set for an hour, half an hour aside. Petitioners will have to keep track of your time. And when you step to the podium and start your argument, please tell us who you are and who you represent. And most of us, not all of us, have iPads. And I just wanted you to know, for the benefit of the audience, that we have our briefs, our notes, and we take notes of what you say or what you don't say. And we're not surfing with handling our emails either. So with that, let's begin.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. My name is Franklin Nachman, Assistant City Attorney. And with me is Robert Nespor from our office representing the City and County of Denver. The City's position in this appeal is that the Court of Appeals erred when it concluded that a proposed amendment to the Denver Fire Department disciplinary system, in this case a matrix system like that in the Police Department and the Sheriff Department, constituted a term and condition of employment for purposes of the city charter. Its decision holding the discipline as a term and condition of employment, and therefore the city could not implement the system without first bargaining with the union, threatens to eliminate a system of discipline established by charter and in place for more than 50 years. The facts and legislative history here are not disputed, but they are significant toward resolving the issues in this appeal. In the beginning, and in the beginning we're talking about 1904, the Civil Service Commission was established by the city charter, and it had the power to reinstate police and fire employees who were wrongfully discharged. The appeal provisions are now set forth in section 9415 of the charter, which provides for appeals from disciplinary decisions of the manager of safety after a recommendation from the fire chief. The other charter provisions that have been discussed at length in this appeal begin with 9413 of the charter, which provides that departmental rules of conduct shall be set forth by the fire chief with the approval of the manager of safety. These rules have existed for decades and are set forth by departmental directives issued by the chief of the fire department. And the parties have stipulated that firefighters have been disciplined for violating this code of conduct. The following section, 9414, sets out a procedure for discipline that the chief initiates the action submitted to the manager with specifications. The employee has an opportunity for notice and to be heard. The manager may approve, disapprove, or modify the recommendation by written order. Section 9415 provides for the review of disciplinary process, and as I have referenced, the manager's decision is subject to review before a hearing officer through the Civil Service Commission procedures, and thereafter through judicial review as provided by the Colorado Rules of Civil Procedure. The chief also has a power to suspend pending an investigation or filing an indictment. These provisions existed before the advent of collective bargaining in 1971, and they have not been materially changed since that time. And the Court of Appeals did correctly recognize that discipline is a management prerogative. The right to collective bargaining was established by charter in 1971, and the right that established that is set forth in section 973 of the charter, which established the right to bargain collectively as to wages, rates of pay, hours, grievance procedures, working conditions, and other terms and conditions of employment, which the Court of Appeals characterized as a broad category. The accepted matters are the table of organization and pensions, and we will concede that it neither includes nor excludes discipline in this section. Now, if a matter is subject to collective bargaining, then That matter, that subject matter, belongs in the collective bargaining agreement. And if it is in the collective bargaining agreement, it is subject to the grievance and arbitration procedure, because a grievance is defined as a violation of the collective bargaining agreement in Article 15, Section 1 of the agreement. After the right to bargain was established in 1971, it's important to note that at the very outset, the collective bargaining agreement states that it is subject and subordinate to not only the city charter, but also to the directives and guidelines of the department, not inconsistent with its terms. And it is also subject and subordinate to the rules and regulations of the Civil Service Commission. Article 6, which is the rights of management, also excludes from the grievance process rights and functions of management, including modification and enforcement of directives and guidelines, which should include disciplinary directives. Finally, and perhaps most importantly, Article 15, Section 1, that sets forth the grievance procedure, provides, quote, a grievance is a claim that the city has violated an express provision of this agreement and does not include any disciplinary matters. And that, Your Honors, is the only mention of discipline in the entire collective bargaining agreement. There is no exception for process or anything else. The city's position is, viewing the collective bargaining agreement as a whole, the inescapable conclusion must be that the right to collective bargaining conferred by Section 973 of the Charter is subordinate to the provisions of Section 4 of Article 9 of the Charter, which establishes a comprehensive system for discipline, including the Civil Service Commission. These facts are significant because they help resolve the issue of, first of all, proper interpretation of the Charter. Second, whether it was proper for the Court of Appeals to adopt a balancing test, which it did. And if so, if the balancing test that they stated is proper, was it properly applied? The parties do agree on the standard of review that Charter provisions are to be interpreted like statutes, and therefore this is a question of law. Your review, of course, is de novo and you are not required to afford deference to the Court of Appeals or District Court decisions. The Court of Appeals reached the same outcome, but on different grounds in the District Court. It rejected both parties' suggested rules of construction, but it did cite the rule of construction that courts must attempt to harmonize statutes to effectuate legislative intent. There's also a similar rule of construction, which we believe applies in this case, which is a court must consider charter provisions like statutory provisions as a whole and attempt to give effect to all its parts. Now, the Court of Appeals justified imposing this new balancing test by concluding that neither Section 9413 of the Charter in the disciplinary section nor 973, which established collective bargaining, were more specific than the other. We believe that the court erred by only looking at Section 9413 while ignoring the following four subsections, all of which address discipline, including the powers and authority of the manager to impose discipline and the authority of the Civil Service Commission to review and decide appeals from the manager's order. If the Court of Appeals had correctly applied this rule or these rules of construction, we believe there would be no need for a balancing test. The city's interpretation would harmonize these positions and further legislative intent. Discipline will continue to be established by the department with procedures for challenges subject to the rules and procedures of the Civil Service Commission and by judicial review. It would leave intact the right to bargain over many other subjects, such as wages, rates of pay, hours of work, and grievance procedures. Conversely, the union's interpretation of discipline, and they do not limit discipline in any way, if it is a term and condition of employment, it would eviscerate well-established policy by transferring the entire subject of discipline to the collective bargaining process and making it subject to the grievance arbitration process where it has been excluded by agreement of the parties for more than 40 years.
Mr. Nachman, could I interrupt you 1 second about where you're going on the argument there? You sort of addressed the problem of a special or specific as opposed to a general statute. I'm curious, does by you suggesting and arguing that the provision dealing with discipline is a special or more specific, if I'm understanding that
correctly. We did. And the Court of Appeals disagreed.
Does that lead to the conclusion then that you are conceding the disciplinary matters you're talking about are terms and conditions? Are they a specific example of a more general statute?
Not in this setting. I mean, you can say that anything affecting an employee could be considered a term and condition of employment. If you look at a sort of a dictionary definition, I think this is a position that we have taken. But if we're trying to effectuate legislative intent here, we do have, and we have had for years, provisions to deal with discipline. On the other hand, since the advent of collective bargaining and when this charter provision was passed, there's no specific reference to it. It's not included, as I said, and it's not excluded. But because if we're going to use term and condition of employment and compare it to another, and this is our point, four other provisions in the charter, it's apparent that discipline, at least in this state, and it may not be true in other states, and I'll talk about that, is not a term and condition of even though it does obviously affect the employment relationship.
I thought that was a little more the thrust of your argument, but then could you flesh out why you think the general specific rules should apply?
Well, that is a rule of construction. We disagree with the Court of Appeals that it shouldn't have applied because we do have, as we said, on one hand, we have a detailed set of procedures for dealing with discipline in the fire department. On the other hand, we have a statute that doesn't include it specifically, but there's a general term of terms and conditions of employment for that reason, because the charter has chosen to legislate and require discipline to be handled in a certain manner that is more specific than a one line in a provision allowing or establishing collective bargaining to allow bargaining over terms and conditions of employment.
The Court of Appeals disagreed with you, saying that if it applied that theory of statutory construction, there would in fact be an absurd result in that the city would never have to bargain over any kind of employment condition. I believe I'm stating that correctly. Do you, obviously you disagree with that, but that was why the Court of Appeals essentially said that if your specific general argument was right, that couldn't have been the meaning of the framers of the draft.
I think what the Court of Appeals said is that you couldn't bargain over any term and condition of employment related to discipline. It didn't say that the city then could take the position that it didn't have to bargain over.
I think what they said is that they wouldn't have to bargain over any matter related to conduct at all, and that was what was overbroad. They didn't delineate just discipline, which is the position you seem to be taking now.
Well, discipline arises from conduct.
Well, there's other kinds of conduct, how you dress, when you show up, that kind of thing. And that's what I understood the Court of Appeals to be saying.
Well, I'm having a little
how you dress, when you show up, that kind of thing. That's what I understood the Court of Appeals to be saying. And that your interpretation of specific being prevailing over general was therefore overbroad or led to an absurd result. In other words, it could not have been the intent of the
statute.
I disagree
in this situation. I think if we took the position.
Well, let me ask my question.
Okay.
Here's the question. Why is specific over general appropriate when we're simply talking about discipline? How does not, if you're trying to limit that argument to just discipline, which is your argument, where do you get the language for that in the statute we're talking about?
Because the charter itself has specific and detailed provisions for discipline. And that's why we say it's specific as to general. This is the article, and this system is not optional. And every firefighter has to.
We'll distinguish that, though, from any other kind of conduct, which is what the Court of Appeals was trying to do.
Well, if the conduct was, I mean, I'm not trying to evade your question. I mean, I need something a little more concrete. But if that's the case. If discipline is a term and condition of employment, then the city would then have to bargain over whether certain conduct should be punishable by termination or by suspension.
Maybe we're just missing each other here, and I apologize if my questions aren't very clear, but I think that was exactly the point that the Court of Appeals was making, the one you just made. And that's why Chief Judge Davidson, so that can't have been what they meant, and therefore disregarded the specific over general theory.
Well, as I said, and I'm sorry if I'm missing the thrust of your question, but that is the intent is that this is conduct is to, and discipline are to be within the processes of the Civil Service Commission and the collective bargaining agreement itself recognizes that by placing that outside of the collective bargaining agreement. And there are really no provisions in the collective bargaining agreement that deal with conduct. And I think, as I argued, that this would transfer the process to the grievance arbitration procedure and render totally ineffectual the civil service process that has been in existence for years.
Well, apparently this controversy it came about because of a major change in the code of conduct. Is that correct or not?
Well, not a change in the code of conduct. What it was is the police department and the fire department had a matrix system. And what the matrix is, if I can talk about it fairly quickly, it establishes six conduct categories, and under each category there are examples of rule violations by number. Some of them can go, and A is the lowest and F is the highest. Some of them that are very general can fall into any of those six categories. Some of them that are more serious, for the police department, for example, use of force can only be from D to F. And there's some, like departure from the truth, that are F and presumptive termination, which is kind of what we call industrial felonies. So this was a system to try to ensure more comparative discipline and also to make the process more transparent. But in order to set up a matrix, you wouldn't just say that it just exists. You have to set up the categories, what each category should cover, what rule violation should be in which category. And also, once you choose a conduct category, A through F, there are presumptive penalties, and they can be either increased or decreased if they're mitigating or aggravating circumstances, except in the highest category, since the presumption is termination, there is no aggravating circumstance. So that's what the process and the substance of it was. And that was what the unions asked the city to bargain with it, not only before it been implemented, but by definition, what all the categories should be, what the substance of the matrix should be.
Could I use that to relate your answer there back to the general specific question then? So apparently, some of the discipline that would be involved in the matrix might involve conditions of employment in the sense that they might involve termination or they might involve wages or whatever. Is that right?
Well, the matrix would not involve wages. No.
What would the discipline be that you were saying is different and more specific from terms of employment.
What we're saying is that the subject of discipline and the processes for reviewing discipline are not as defined by the what should be the applicable law in the state, would not be terms of conditions, even though it admittedly affects an employee's employment. But there are any number of matters that can affect an employee's employment, and that doesn't mean they're all terms and conditions of employment.
But what, for example? I mean, could you give us some examples?
A uniform, which you're required to wear on your uniform.
Okay, I mean, that was what I was thinking, how people are required to dress. Now, the Court of Appeals, if I can carry on with this, seems to suggest that your interpretation would obviate, in essence, the specific versus general kind of distinction by making all conduct subject to collective bargaining.
Not all conduct, no.
Okay, well, let me just read to you what the Court of Appeals said, and then you tell me why you disagree. This is, both sections are broad. We're not persuaded that one is more specific than the other. If we assume that section 9.4.13 is more specific and therefore prevails, such an interpretation would result in the city never having to bargain over any matter related to firefighter conduct, regardless of its effect on the terms and conditions of employment. And why is that wrong?
Well, it's wrong from the standpoint that there could be bargaining over some aspect of conduct. It's only when it goes into the disciplinary process that subsection 4 of Article 9 kicks in, and that is where it belongs, which is not in the grievance arbitration process. It belongs in the Civil Service Commission.
Counsel, I'm sorry, can I just repeat what you said I make sure I understand your argument. You're suggesting that you're still collective bargaining over conduct. For example, you have to wear your uniform at this time. But if the person doesn't do that, it goes into the discipline system, which is not subject to collective bargaining.
That's correct. At least how it is handled by the fire chief and the manager of safety, and then what the provisions are, the rights to appeal after that through the Civil Service Commission, the courts, that's been established by charter, and it should stay that way.
Just to follow up, I mean, I guess there's a lot of questions about specific versus general argument that you're making. I mean, is that actually necessary to your argument? I mean, can you restate your argument, just not using that?
Yeah, I think what I was trying to say,
maybe it was
inarticulate, is that you don't have to do that. But if you do go to the principle of interpretation that the Court of Appeals did approve, which is that the statutes, in this case the charter section, should be harmonized to effectuate legislative intent, then you should reach the decision that discipline belongs in the civil service process, and wages, hours, other terms and conditions of employment belong in the collective bargaining.
Okay, so that actually doesn't rely on specific versus general. It's just a contractual argument that the contract on its terms shows a commitment of discipline outside of
I agree. I'm trying to work with the Court of Appeals on this.
I understand.
This is what they wanted, and so I've taken
it. Well, is it in fact what they wanted? I thought one of the things that you were the most concerned about was that the Court of Appeals came up with what you're calling a new balancing test, as opposed to harmonizing of the statutes.
Well, that's correct from the standpoint that I don't think there is a need for a balancing test, because the reason for the balancing test was that the court only looked at one section of the charter to say that, well, Article Section 4 of Article 9 is just as general as Section 7 of Article 9, and we disagree with that.
Well, if you don't think that they're just as general, do you think that one is more specific than the other, or what is
Absolutely,
your...
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, well, I thought I heard you tell Justice Ide that you weren't really relying on that, that you wanted to harmonize the sections of the statute.
Well, I said we don't have to. We would like it.
Okay. What is your position? Just very simply, what do you want this opinion to say?
We want the opinion to say that the subject of discipline in the Denver Fire Department is a management prerogative subject to Article 9, Section 4 of the Charter, and it is not a term of condition of employment.
I beg your pardon. Now, I understand that's the conclusion you want us to reach. What is the logic, the statutory interpretation you want us to use to get there?
Well, one principle is to harmonize and effectuate legislative intent and to consider the provisions as a whole and attempt to give effect to all parts of it. And it's been our position throughout that accepting the union's interpretation would do away with the civil service process and transfer it to the collective bargaining and grievance arbitration process.
I guess we'll find out when it's the other council's turn, but I'm still concerned about whether or not the city acknowledges that the code of conduct itself is a subject of some kind of consultation, collective bargaining process, despite what the penalties are and what the process is for adjudging the violation of that code.
Well, and I hope the answer is correct. Up till now, it has never been a subject of bargaining. And in the record, there are directives that are issued by the chief of police, and pardon me, the chief of the fire department, and that's what section 9413 provides. And up to this point, the union has never asked to engage in collective bargaining over what should be in the directives.
Good. The status quo is without this matrix that apparently weights specific conduct in different ways, leading up to termination, but certainly affects employment. I mean, you know. That's why we're in this, trying to sort this out.
I agree, but not all aspects of employment would fall within the terms of conditions of employment because of the existence of the provisions in Article 9, Section 4.
I don't know if I got a response to my question, so I'll try one more time.
Yeah.
Is the code of conduct itself, regardless of the process by which the breach of that is a judge, is that within or without the consultation process that collective bargaining is all about?
That we would contend, and that's been the history up to this point, has been a management prerogative. I see I only have 3 minutes left, so I'd like to say that.
You may. Mr. Bursher?
Chief Justice, members of the court, my name is Thomas Busher. I'm here representing Local 858. In listening to the argument for the past 30 minutes or so, I wonder whether we're litigating the same case. Let me back up to some facts. It is a fact that the Denver firefighters have never requested to bargain over the rules of conduct. That does not mean we concede they're not bargainable, but we have never requested to bargain. It is a fact we never requested to bargain over the pre-disciplinary process. It is a fact that we never requested to bargain over the disciplinary appeal process. What triggered this lawsuit was the city announcing that it was going to develop and impose a matrix system, we fear, like that for the police department. And at that point, Local 858 said, wait a minute, that's a mandatory subject, and we want to bargain about that. That was the demand. It was ignored 3 times. And the city went ahead, setting up this committee of almost 50 people to get input into the establishment of this matrix, but says it is not a subject of bargaining. That brought us ultimately to hear. What this case is about is the process used to determine whether a disciplinary matrix should be part of a collective bargaining agreement and be part of the terms and conditions of employment of Denver firefighters, or if so, not or, if so, what it should say. That's all this case is about. It's all it's ever been about. Now, I guess that I will have to take some responsibility because in the briefs, the trial court, and to the Court of Appeals, we have cited cases from around the country that say that discipline is a mandatory subject of bargaining under comparable statutory language. And it uses just the word discipline because we could find no cases that talked about a matrix. Okay? But this case has only been about the matrix. And the matrix has, as the city has conceded, presumptive levels of discipline. By the way, the code of conduct for the fire department is joining us at a 3 in the record. Simple statement of a number of things, very generally worded, and the discretion about how much discipline and thing has always been left to the chief. And the record reflects that Local 858 has negotiated with the chief on individual cases where firefighters were accused and engaged in some sort of misconduct, and whether they negotiated whether they did, and if so, what the level of penalty should be. Unrefuted testimony in the record that those kinds of negotiations have taken place. Now, the relevant charter sections, city has talked about two of them, but as this one, it talks about implementing public policy, the policy of the charter. Well, it doesn't pay any attention to the public policy announced in section 9.7.1. which says that it's the policy of the city, I'm going to paraphrase here, to have a cooperative relationship with its firefighters by providing them the right to bargain collectively and to grant them all rights of labor other than anything affecting work stoppage. Okay? Then 9.7.3 is the language that we've been talking about working conditions and all other terms and conditions of employment are the language included in that, with the two exceptions. Note, no exception about discipline, even though at the time this charter provision was enacted, all of that civil service stuff was already in the charter. Okay? Now, let's really look at section 9.4.13 that the city relies upon. By the way, the references to then sections 14 and 15, et cetera, there, Local 858 believes, are simply irrelevant to this dispute because they deal with what is the due process requirement before discipline is imposed. They deal with what happens if discipline is imposed in an appeal. And those are not the same thing as creating rules of conduct with presumptive levels of discipline. We're before those. We're talking about negotiating before we get to the pre-disciplinary process and things. If Local 858 is demanding to bargain over these things, we'd be litigating a different case. We'd be litigating different charter language. Then those charter sections would be relevant. But they're not relevant to the question of the rules of conduct and presumptive levels of discipline. Okay? But all it says is that those rules governing the conduct of members shall be set forth as written rules and regulations by the chief and the manager, point one, and that any member, well, it also says very specifically, I might add, that those rules cannot contain any political or religious qualifications or disqualifications. So that's the only limit on what they can contain. Other than that, very broad, very general language. And then it goes on to say that a member of the fire department shall be subject to, and then it lists types of discipline. Now, first of all, what those rules say is a matter of discretion. And when that was the only language in the charter, that discretion was vested exclusively in the city. No question. Now, it is also a matter of discretion whether to discipline and at what level of discipline. That is also a matter of discretion. And matters of discretion are exactly the thing that collective bargaining is designed to have the cooperative relationship about. What should those rules be? What should happen to a firefighter
who negotiates it. The city apparently recognizes that it is not the font of all wisdom in this, because it tried to establish this committee of 50 people, most of whom had no relationship to the fire department. But they wouldn't bargain with the very people that these were going to impact.
So I need to move this argument along, if you don't mind. So if you could tell me what your point is with respect to 9413 and the way the Court of Appeals approached its attempt to reconcile what it perceived to be equally valid but conflicting provisions.
We find the Court of Appeals reconciliation of those sections and establishing the balancing test in the way they established it acceptable. We prefer the rationale of the trial court to come to the same conclusion, but we believe that the Court of Appeals decision is well supported by the law and is a rational reconciliation of the two sections. And that's exactly the point I was going to, Justice Rice.
Thanks.
So how does one give in effect to both of those sections, right? Well, it was interesting today. The city has never argued in a brief that a disciplinary matrix was not a term and condition of employment. And yet that appeared to be what was said here today. And believe that that's really unarguable. It is absolutely a term and condition of employment. Okay? That may only be half the analysis, but that's an indisputable half of the analysis. Okay? So you got to give effect to that, then you got to have to give effect to it means you got to call it a subject of bargaining, because that's what 9.7.3 says. So now how does that interpretation impact 9.4.13? Well, the rules still set forth in writing. The chief and the manager of safety can still set forth those rules. As a matter of fact, they can participate in the bargaining and have direct input into what those say. And firefighters can still be disciplined. Still be subject to discipline. And so there is no conflict at all.
But the matrix becomes subject to collective bargaining.
Yes.
And the matrix determines the discipline.
The matrix sets forth guidelines for the discipline. There's still some discretion. One would think. I mean, we're talking about something we don't know what's going to say. Firefighters are not conceding that if they have a matrix, it's going to look like the police department's matrix.
Well, I guess I'm thinking something sort of along the lines of like sentencing guidelines or something like that.
Is that kind of the right idea?
All right. So if we're setting some sort of matrix, and that then becomes subject to collective bargaining, doesn't that take away a significant amount of the discretion?
Well, the matrix itself...
Isn't that the essence of what we're worrying about here? I'm going to be quiet when you answer. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. The matrix itself limits discretion. That's part of what the police matrix does, and in fact was designed to do. Okay, so limit discretion. Say, X conduct means Y discipline unless there are other circumstances. So by its very nature, it does. But it absolutely limits the discretion of the city to write the matrix to engage in bargaining. But Justice Rice, that's what collective bargaining is. The city, before collective bargaining, had total discretion to set wages. So discretion to work.
No, I get it. What I want, I think I understand your argument. What I want to understand, though, is why you think it's appropriate to subject the matrix itself to collective bargaining, and just run through it in a very linear fashion for me, if you would.
The matrix itself, because it sets presumptive levels of discipline, has a direct impact on terms and conditions of employment for firefighters. It impacts, for example, a suspension can cost the firefighter money. A fine, which is allowed, can cost the firefighter money, okay? Can impact their grade and rank. It can impact whether they are employed. All of those are terms and conditions of employment very directly, and that's why we believe this is a mandatory subject of bargaining.
And why is that different than, you're saying that it's different than making a decision, a discretionary decision about what a firefighter wears or how he's trained or this kind of thing. But if he doesn't wear what he's supposed to or he violates some training standard, then he's subject to discipline, which relies upon the matrix, which is subject to collective bargaining?
Yes, but I don't think I have said that when a firefighter wears what uniform is not a term and condition of employment that would not be subject to bargaining. Okay? I reserve the right to take a position on that later, if
sure.
that case ever comes up.
But can you help me with that distinction, please? Because that's the kind of distinction I think the Court of Appeals was worrying about a little bit.
Well, Your Honor, I guess I don't see a huge distinction between them, quite honestly, okay? I could easily see making an argument that a rule that says that if you're going to appear in front of this court, you're going to wear your Class A uniform, for example, all right, okay, is a condition of employment. Now, whether it's worth the effort and expenditure of resources to bargain about is a different question, but is it a mandatory subject? I think the better argument is yes, but that's not this case.
I'm just going to say, just on that same point, though, when you were narrowing the issues for us, I thought you were very express that you're not concerned with the designation of what conduct would be disciplinable, only what the penalty for that would be.
Not concerned over states, and I apologize if I gave that impression. We are concerned about what those rules are, okay? And the history of not demanding to bargain about them could very well just simply be a reflection of the fact that the rules that have been articulated and set forth in the past have been perfectly reasonable and acceptable rules. But could the city adopt unreasonable rules that we would be very opposed to? Absolutely. So, yes, we believe those are a subject of bargaining as well. That was our position in the trial court. That the actual rules are a subject of bargaining, but this case was included those, but it was focused primarily, admittedly, on the presumptive levels.
And did it seem to you, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but did it seem to you that what the Court of Appeals was concerned about was limiting the chief or the city's ability to simply define disciplinable conduct so broadly as to take up the entire area of terms and conditions? And that was the reason, or was it, that they felt this was some kind of a balance was required and the city had to be limited in some way?
I think that was part of the Court of Appeals rationale, although I don't think that was exclusively it. I think it looked at, what it said it was doing was looking at the, find my phrase here, the respective interests of the parties in adopting the balancing. And the respective interest of the city was to maintain good conduct, efficiency in the fire department. That was the city's, that's the basic interest the city has in adopting rules of conduct. And we have no dispute with that, okay? And then the firefighters' interest, though, is how the application of those rules and you know, how reasonable they are actually impact the wages, hours, and terms and conditions of employment. And the court, I think, made a very important statement, the Court of Appeals, saying that the city will continue to determine how and when to impose discipline, but according to agreed upon standards. So its ability to control the fire department is not changed. It's not changed beyond what it is today. It still has that ability to determine whether to impose discipline, under what circumstances, under what facts. But we're going to talk about some of those rules and some of that presumptive level of discipline. That's all we want to do, is be able to talk about it.
Counsel, can I just pin you down here? So I guess you started your argument talking about the rules of conduct, and you said they're very general and they're an appendix, whatever. I guess your argument is those have not been subject, you have not asked to collectively bargain over them. Those, correct.
Until this case, because the matrix has the rules in it. Yes.
Okay. So the matrix actually just has exactly the same rules that, are there differences there?
Well, we don't know what it would say. Okay. Let's just can assume
generally
the same rules, and then adds the presumptive levels of discipline.
I see. Okay. And I guess you're saying here that even though you have not asked to collectively bargain over those rules in the past, you have not said that you haven't conceded the point that you haven't given up your right to bargain over them.
That is correct.
Okay. And then my second question is, what do you think about the balancing test from the Court of Appeals? Do you endorse it or not?
As a second choice, yes.
Okay.
Prefer the rationale of the district court. But as a second choice, it is the reason Local 858 can endorse it is it is well recognized in labor relations in both the public and private sector. And so it's not anything new and different in labor relations or to this court, as we pointed out in our brief. So yes, we can endorse it. Yes, it doesn't set forth a black and white rule, but very little in the law does anymore.
But you would prefer to resolve it just on contract terms and that your interpretation prevails and not resorting to balancing? You say it's your second choice, so what does your first choice look like? I know you've already said it, but
okay.
As compared to the balancing test.
Okay. The district court said that if you try to look at the two provisions of the charter that are really relevant here, that discipline matrix, is falls within that term and condition, and therefore it is a mandatory subject to bargain. Period.
Okay.
That was the district court rationale. That's our first choice.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Pusher, could you discuss a little bit about, you used the term presumptive discipline. Actually, sentencing guidelines are difficult to analogize to because there's no discretion or very little. So I don't quite understand the relationship between discipline under the charter and a potential matrix. How does that work?
All right, well, maybe my acknowledgement of the comparability of sentencing guidelines was based upon my own ignorance of criminal law,
okay.
Since I don't do criminal law. The example of a disciplinary matrix that's in the record is the police, okay? So that's what we can look at as an example. And what it says is Rule A, if you violate Rule A, your presumptive level of discipline is X. But if there are aggravating circumstances, it may be higher.
But what's the role of the chief in that matrix?
The chief initially makes the recommendation to the manager of safety, who has to approve it.
Right. And what discretion does the chief have then, and as his managerial prerogative?
I'm not sure I can answer that with any specificity in the police system. What discretion the chief would have under a negotiated matrix would be then be determined by the terms of that matrix in the fire department. He would have some discretion, there's no doubt, because black and white rules don't work in this. How much discretion would be part of the negotiations?
Could I shift you just a little bit? I think it's related to this, but we haven't really talked about the sort of the procedural posture of this case. If I understand it here, we've got an injunction that prohibits the city from putting in place this kind of a matrix. From your point of view, then, does that mean no matter what they put in such a matrix, it would violate, it would be a term and condition, would affect the term and condition of employment such that they would necessarily have to bargain about it? That is, we're preempting, we're not saying some particular thing they've done violates the bargaining agreement. We're saying they just can't do it in an injunction. Is that how you, how would you explain why that is so?
That gets back to the point I made at the beginning, Your Honor, that this is about process, that the city cannot unilaterally do it. It has to bargain with us if it wants to have a matrix.
But the reason for that is because, as I understand it from your argument, it necessarily affects terms and conditions of employment.
Yes.
Without regard to what they would put in it, I guess.
Yeah, because... Well, I get, is it possible to set up a disciplinary matrix that wouldn't affect terms and conditions of employment? I don't think so, Your Honor.
I mean, if it has presumptive levels of discipline, those impact the terms and conditions of employment. So I don't think it's possible for
that. So it's not just that you're saying, well, we're going to presume that would affect wages in some way, or that would affect continued employment. There are not specific things like that that you're saying would be employment. You're saying for them to set up a matrix necessarily affects terms and conditions of employment.
Yes.
And let me put it yet a different way, just so we absolutely understand this. So the city is enjoined from setting up a matrix unless it goes through collective bargaining.
Correct.
I mean, and that's the end result.
There's yes.
an injunction keeping them from doing that.
Yes.
And it doesn't have anything to do with what the outcome of the matrix might be.
No, it does not, because we don't know what the outcome would be if they bargained. Or if they did it unilaterally.
And I guess one place to go with that is back to the Court of Appeals balancing. They seem to look at a balancing of interests in deciding how to reconcile or how to deal with these two provisions. Would it seem equally or more appropriate to wait and see what the city has done and then determine whether it has done something that infringes on an interest of the union?
Your Honor, that's a different question, and so I guess we have to back up. The presumption, I think, all along in this case, and a presumption which I think is really indisputable, is that establishing a disciplinary matrix by its very nature affects the terms and conditions of employment of firefighters. It's not possible to write one that doesn't, I think. And so it's the question then of how it impacts. And the process, not the result, excuse me, but the process of how we get to that matrix. The case is about process, not result.
Okay.
The city makes these arguments about the parade of horrors because of the Court of Appeals decision about how that the chief and the manager won't have a role in discipline, and I've addressed that. And it will remove the civil service process from the civil service system from the appeal disciplinary process. That's where I think we're talking about two different cases. We didn't ask to negotiate about post-disciplinary appeals. That's not what this case is about. This case is about what's going to happen to a firefighter who breaks a particular rule.
Well, so what's the status quo? What happens now if there's a violation by a disciplinary violation by a firefighter, given that this preliminary injunction is in place? Obviously, a firefighter can still be disciplined. And how does that work?
An investigation is done about alleged misconduct. A report is provided to the chief. The chief then has what's known as a pre-disciplinary meeting with the firefighter to explain the charges and to allow the firefighter to give an explanation of did or did not do a particular thing, or yes, I did, but it's not serious, okay? Chief then makes a recommendation of actual discipline to the manager of safety.
Without using a matrix?
No matrix at all.
So now we're at the only point of difference. The chief makes a recommendation without reference to a matrix.
Yes.
Goes to the manager of safety, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
So the only distinction is this matrix.
In the current state of affairs, that is correct. Everything else is the same.
Okay. Thank you.
The city argued here today that all of a sudden discipline would become part of the grievance procedure. Well, not necessarily, but let's assume that a matrix was agreed to and put into a collective bargaining agreement. Right now, the language of the grievance procedure says violations of the agreement are subject to the grievance procedure. But it also says, as the city points out, discipline is accepted from that very specifically. So whether the grievance procedure applies to a discipline imposed under an agreed upon matrix is going to depend on the definition of the grievance procedure. That's just more collective bargaining, and I will admit would raise an issue if it was subject to the grievance procedure. Maybe we've got a conflict with the civil service provisions of the charter about the post-disciplinary appeal. Maybe. okay? But at least recognize that potential for conflict is there. But the city's heavy reliance on the terms of the collective bargaining agreement are quite candidly puzzling. It seems to be suggesting that you interpret language in a charter by what parties have agreed to in a collective bargaining agreement. And quite candidly, Local 858 isn't aware of any law that says that, which brings me to the fiberboard citation in the city's reply brief. They quoted some language allegedly out of the fiberboard case, which says exactly what I just said I didn't think was the law. Okay? Well, I've looked at fiberboard. I've looked at page 211 for that site. I didn't find it, so I used Lexis. I used Google. That site does not exist in fiberboard. It does not exist in any federal court case that either Google or Lexis can find. That quote, I don't know where it came from. Let me tell you what the Supreme Court did say in fiberboard at page 211, okay? And that is, while not determinative, it is appropriate to look at industrial bargaining practices in appraising propriety of including a particular subject within the scope of mandatory bargaining. Okay, that sounds reasonable. What are the industrial practices here? Well, industrial practices in public sector bargaining are seen from the various cases that have been cited to this court, that discipline is often a subject matter of collective bargaining. Often, something related to discipline appears in collective bargaining agreements. So the industrial practice is absolutely consistent with the conclusions reached by both the district court and the Court of Appeals.
Let me ask you a question just because I don't quite understand the policies that are going on here. This is maybe kind of a dumb question, so excuse me, but if the chief can now recommend discipline based on no standards, if you will, no matrix, just based upon his or her discretion, why do they want a matrix?
I don't know, Your Honor.
The matrix would control discretion.
Absolutely. If you look at the matrix of the police department, it is impossible to conclude other than it controls discretion.
Thank you.
Local 858 asks that this court affirm the ultimate outcome, that the disciplinary matrix, because a demand for bargain was made, the city cannot implement it unilaterally. It would prefer, as noted, the trial court's rationale, but if you want to accept the Court of Appeals balancing test, that's acceptable as well. It's the bottom line that we think is appropriate and absolutely correct under either rationale. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Buescher. Mr. Martin, rebuttal.
Thank you. I first want to answer Justice Rice's question. The fire chief has discretion. Well, we have a thing called comparative discipline. So discipline must be comparative. The matrix is established to make the process more transparent. And there is discretion because the chief and the manager of safety have to decide which particular category the conduct falls into, and that's subject to review if they cannot justify the rationale for doing that. With respect to the cases from other jurisdictions, actually, if you look at them, and we cited all of them, that we mentioned the Court of Appeals and cited in Plains Street, none of them deal with the subject of discipline. And none of them, some of them come from cases in which there was an interpretation of a collective bargaining agreement where the subject matter was already a mandatory subject of bargaining. So these cases have no application to the dispute here because we're construing the charter. And that is the external source of law in this case. And at least some of the cases have suggested that it's a mandatory subject of bargaining unless it's preempted by some other statute or provision.
This committee that was set up to study this matrix, did it include representatives of the union?
It did. Actually, that's the point. The union was invited with representatives of other groups, and the police department was involved because they had created a matrix. And their position actually was, forget all those other people. You have to talk to us. We are the only people that have any say in this. And therefore, you're not going to participate.
So how would the community be factored in under the proposal of the union?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Given the posture of this case, I assume you want this preliminary injunction dissolved.
Yes.
Okay. So is it true or is it not true that the community would not be involved under the union's proposal in setting up the...
If the injunction stays in effect, yes. That was the point. The point was to enjoin the city from discussing the matter with anyone other than the union.
Well, what was that the point? I thought it was to enjoin the city from implementing a matrix.
Well, and by doing that, they could not take any steps to implement a matrix. I mean, I think
without
that follows.
Going through collective bargaining.
Yeah, you talk to us, or you essentially can't embark on this process at all. I find it interesting that the union has not really taken the position that, oh, well, we're just talking about, and I seem out of time, that we're just talking about implementing a matrix. Their position is that discipline is a mandatory subject of bargaining. And if discipline is a mandatory subject of bargaining, then we just can't kind of lop off this process part and implementing a matrix when they've already conceded that we would have to also negotiate over each and every provision of the matrix, meaning what each and every conduct violation should be, what rules should be covered, and all of those issues as well. Thank you. Unless you have any other questions.
Thank you. I want to thank both attorneys for your arguments. The arguments will be submitted on briefs, and the court will take a 10-minute recess. Please announce the recess.
Thank you.